Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
This is an encore edition of Soundcheck.
I am the girl you know can't look you in the eye. I am the girl you know so sick I cannot try.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In a little while, the Brazilian superstar Marisa Monte joins us to talk about her two new and very different albums. But first, after riding the grunge trend of the early 90s, Courtney Love has played the roles of morning rock widow, outspoken musician, award-winning actress, and tabloid cover queen. With the release of Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love, the former Hole frontwoman tells her own story in pictures, letters, drawings, and song lyrics. Courtney Love, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
In the intro to this book, you write, "I've already said that I would never write a book."
Mm.
Why? Well, I mean, you haven't really written a book here.
No,
it's a very unusual set of memoirs, but why now?
It just got to a point where we were moving my stuff from storage, and I have so much ephemera. I don't have half as much as I used to have. There's one thing I truly regret that's not in here, and I know my stepfather had it, which is a letter I wrote to Elton John when I was 7 or 8 years old. It said, "Dear Elton, someday I'm going to be a famous rock star and we're going to be best friends." And, you know, we're good friends now, but I couldn't find that. And I don't know how I even got the juvenile files. I think I stole them.
Mm-hmm.
And just they stuck around. But I've kept journals and diaries my whole life. And also my songwriting process starts with poetry.
Right.
And, you know, I was reading poetry and exposed to poetry at a very, very young age. So I started writing it at a very young age.
You had a, if I may say, a kind of a grim childhood. I mean,
Dickensian.
Yeah. So poetry was what really kind of held you together in those early years?
Yeah. I remember the image of Marilyn Monroe, like a Warhol image of her. And I remember staring at the cover of Dylan's Bringing It All Back Home and wanting to somehow merge those two images when I grew up and became famous. But I was going to somehow do that through poetry. I don't know.
But so somehow the two of those, confluence of lyrics and music. It's worked well for Bob Dylan and people like that, and,
right.
And obviously for you too. Now, you actually have a new album that you're working on as well.
It's almost finished, actually. I have it right here. I wish I could play some of it, but it's not all the way mixed, and someone would download it and ruin everything for everyone.
So you're just going to sit here and taunt us with it. The fact that it's sitting in front of you and you won't let us hear it.
It's
called How Dirty Girls Get Clean.
That's the working title. I haven't thought of any. If I could possibly think of a title as good as Blood on the Tracks, I'd go there.
Yeah. But, I mean, it seems somehow appropriate. I mean, you've gone through a very kind of public rehabilitation and stuff. Is this all about starting over again, the memoirs, the new record, the titles?
No, I don't think so, because I think you take your... Well, I've gone through massive public humiliation as well, scapegoating and kind of being almost, you know... I mean, there's really no other way to put it, put through, you know, what amounts to... when you look at the reality of the things I was charged with, like a witch trial, it was like my turn was up, you know. And of course, I didn't make it much, you know, make it hard for them because I was on drugs. But, you know, the major case that, you know, all that court TV footage came from was a case where a police officer said, "Do you have any medication?" And I said, "Why, yes, would you like to see it?" And I showed him a bottle of Percocet and a bottle of Vicodin, and he confiscated them. And then they charged me with having that, and then I provided them with the prescriptions. I mean, it was absurd. Mm. It was really an absurd case.
My guest is Courtney Love, and her memoirs, The Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love. And you know, I guess to me the most surprising thing is, as you were just saying, your private life has been lived out in public on page sixes around the country.
And world, actually.
Yeah. I mean, is this an attempt to kind of take ownership back of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, to some degree, because, you know, I mean, there are, you know, I mean, I want to sell this book, so I don't want to sit and say what's not in it. Mm-hmm. But there are, as I was saying, you know, small rooms full of what's not in this book. You know, it was never going to be a kiss and tell, and you know, entire relationships are excised, and except for that one actor I was speaking to, I was in the elevator. His name somehow didn't get crossed out, but it wasn't a sex story, so it's okay. It's no editor other than, you know, editors that I approve of, is able to. It's not like I'm going off with a writer from Rolling Stone and
right.
They're going to depict me how they would like to. You know, this is how I think, this is what I've been through, this is how I write. That could be a good thing or a bad thing, but it just is.
And it really is, I mean, it is a very unconventional memoir because it literally, I mean, it's not, you know, set in type or anything like that. I mean, it's literally
no, it's in my...
the pieces of paper with coffee stains and
yeah.
Who knows what all else, you know, scotch taped onto pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And among the many, the photos, first of all, the cover photo was taken by Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, and the story about that is that I had no interest in using this photo, although I will say my ass was great when I was 29.
I would probably get in trouble for agreeing with you, so just go on.
The editors had Avedons, they had, you know, Mondino, they had, well, the reason they didn't have Helmut Newton is because when he asked to do my photograph, I was such a jackass back then and so naive, I asked for photo approval of the most famous photographer in the world and he hung up on me. But, you know, literally every great, you know, photographer has photographed me, and the editors continued to like this picture without knowing that Kurt had taken it.
Yeah.
And it was one of the very few things that we did, you know, together. This was for the cover of In Utero, and he was shooting things and, you know, in our living room, flowers and stuff. And, you know, I don't think, because my neuroses about John and Yoko and that kind of being perceived that way, we didn't write enough. I mean, we wrote a few songs together and played together one show, but we didn't do a lot of art together.
Hmm. So this was originally, Kurt was thinking of In Utero cover art or something when he took
this
shot?
Yeah, it was the, when he shot a bunch of stuff for In Utero.
Okay. I want to actually hear a little
but
bit.
But I have to say a caveat.
Yeah.
He had a girlfriend named Tracy Miranda years before me.
Mm-hmm.
I found a picture of Tracy Miranda. It was almost just like this. I think he was an ass man. That just...
All right, we'll file that under the too much information category.
I wanted to play
a little bit from the album In Utero for a reason. Here's
why?
I'll come back to this. Here's Heart-Shaped Box.
She has me like a Pisces. Well, I am weak.
All right, the song is Heart Shaped Box from the Nirvana album In Utero. Courtney Love, my guest on Soundcheck. The book is called Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love, a series of literally diary entries, letters, emails, photos, song lyrics, and a picture of the heart-shaped box that inspired the song. You already talked about, you know, the fact that you and Kurt had done, you were very careful not to go the John and Yoko route, but...
I was. He wasn't. He wanted to do that stuff a lot more than me, but I was a little more neurotic about it.
Yeah. Well, there are also photos in the book of you and him jamming together. You know, do you think that if you'd had more time together that you might eventually have gotten to the point where you would have done something collaboratively?
Yeah, I grew up in institutions and various places where I either learned how not to be scared or just was taught serious feminism. And in a million years, I really, very sincerely, never expected that the man that I was attached to was in any way, shape, or form going to affect my life, cultural impact, career in any way, shape, or form. So when it happened, I froze. I got really frightened. And, you know, you'll see there's one series of pictures of me and Kurt and Francis at the MTV Awards. It was the only public event we ever went to together because I wouldn't go out with him publicly. I didn't want to.
Well, I mean, you know, you're both still really young and...
Yeah, but I just didn't. I just, the whole, you know, succubus weird, you know, thing freaked me out. I didn't get it.
Yeah. Now, is having control of a sort over his musical legacy kind of a burden for you? It made the news last week when you sold part of, what was it, part of the estate to a publishing company here in New York. And they're now going to license it for TV shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I have approval over all of that.
You do? Yeah. Okay, well, that's where I was going with this, because, you know, I'm sure you're thinking, would Kurt have approved of this sort of thing?
Well, you know, here's what Kurt would have approved of. We have a daughter named Frances, and, you know, I don't think it's the best usage of a Nirvana song to advertise, say, carbonated water with sugar in it. But if it's a choice between that and my daughter suffering, the soda can have it.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to come to that conclusion by being really backed up against a wall financially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had over $20 million embezzled from me, and it was in the FBI. It's an open FBI case, and they go slow, those FBI guys, man. You know, but they do go. And I was in serious debt. I had a lot of responsibilities, and, you know, own 98.6 of the publishing. And this guy, really cool guy named Larry Mostel, has a company called Primary Wave. And he came in, a billionaire guy came in who offered more money. But it was like he just wanted it the way Paul Allen collects Jimi Hendrix stuff.
Yep,
you know what I mean? Whereas Mostel actually does stuff. And, you know, we have a really good team and work things out that are really tasteful.
All right, so you are able to have some control still over what's
going
on.
Yeah, you know, we negotiated certain things that they could do and not do. For instance, like hybrid cars are okay.
Yeah, all right.
You know, anti-apartheid is okay. You know, stuff like that. You know, when we got into even the technology language and the law stuff, you know, I got very specific about how to be... cultural changing, but in a liberal way, you know.
We use the word progressive now, Courtney. Progressive.
Is that what we say?
That's the word.
Oh, I've been under Courtney a rock.
Courtney Love is my guest. Her new book is called Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love. Courtney Love is my guest on Soundcheck. More with her in a moment.
Just turns to hell.
Coming up next, as promised, more of our conversation with Courtney Love, and then later, a singer of a very different stripe, multi-platinum-selling Brazilian pop artist Marisa Monte will share two new albums with us. This is Soundcheck. You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck.
And the sky was made of amethyst, and all the stars were just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how to say no.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. My guest is Courtney Love, and the new book, a series of excerpts from her diaries, is called Dirty Blonde. In the background is more from the hit record Live Through This. Courtney, this album came out, platinum-selling record, album of the year, you know, in all the major polls, shortly after Kurt Cobain's death, days after. Then 2 years after that, you were in the film The People versus Larry Flint. Did all of that stuff, the record release, the touring, the filming, publicity for the film, did that really kind of delay whatever mourning process you were going to have?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. I think especially, you know, I've been doing heroin, which I haven't done for, you know, since I stopped, which was 10 years ago. And in order to be a film star, you can't really be on heroin. It's just not a good look. So, to come out of rehab and have Variety, you know, had the front page say, "Love sets screen on fire." You know, I had a real upward trajectory. Boom. You know, I mean, the movies that I passed on, it would be very unladylike to name them, but, there was some crap in there, but either won Oscars for the actresses that played those parts or made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So I made some really huge mistakes, and I'm very happy to say that as of now, I was just asked by one of my very favorite directors in the world to do the title role in a film, the next film that he's doing. So I'm really excited about that. And obviously I'm going to tour on this album, and he's known to be slow. So, you know, it'll be a while before I get that together, but,
so you're not going to tell us the name of this director?
I'm going to let him announce it.
Okay. All right, yet another name crossed off.
Yeah,
as many of them are in the book. However, there's an interesting photo later in the book of you and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah,
with
I saw the other night at the Stones thing. Bill Clinton introduced the Rolling Stones. Scorsese was filming, and you know.
Right. Now, you know, you've scribbled devil's horns on Hillary and a little angel halo. Should we read anything into that?
No, nothing. Okay. She waved at me the other day. I waved at her. And, you know, we had breakfast together twice. And I would say we're not friends, but we're kind of friendly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're also kind of a role model. I mean, you talked about as a child growing up in various, you know, I don't know what to call them, foster homes,
institutions,
yeah, really, where you learned a really kind of strong feminist message. Do you kind of see that as a role that you want to play both for your own daughter and for kids?
Well, it's sort of during Reaganomics at Hillcrest School for Girls in Oregon, they weren't teaching Steinem.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of got that myself. What they had there was structure, and I actually enjoyed that, and it's why I do well on film sets or on tours, because I really enjoy structure. In terms of feminism, you know, during the sort of Britney Spears era of pop culture that we're just leaving now, I didn't know what to say to my daughter, you know, because it seemed as though, you know, we had lost, You know, we had lost as feminists, and particularly feminists who wear lipstick and are into fashion and show their boobs and, you know, were strippers and, you know, whatever. And, you know, whatever nonsense you want to read into it. And to be honest with you...
But that's not nonsense. That's your life.
That is my life. And that's how I survived. And it's also, you know, came natural to me and all that stuff. But to be honest with you, Larry Flint, the person, has gotten me out of a lot more trouble. And this is no offense to Gloria, than Gloria Steinem, the person. I mean, Larry Flint bought... some terrible pictures. I never did anything like porn or anything like that, but they just happened to be, it was just a, they were bad pictures. Deal breaker pictures off, and bought some terrible pictures from someone on two occasions and gave them to me in an envelope at his Christmas party.
Before or after the film?
After the after film. The we remained right. friends. We had right. Dinner 2 weeks ago.
You have a lot of high-powered friends in and out of the music industry. Billy Corgan, almost like a lifelong friend, it seems, for
yeah, he's
you.
A great friend.
Going back even before Kurt Cobain.
He just moved out of my house, actually. He was living there for about 4 months.
Right. Billy Corgan... the founder of the group Smashing Pumpkins now.
And he's playing guitar all over this record.
Right. So you're still working with him. How important was he, you know, sort of in the period after, say, the mid-90s, you know, when you were sort of beginning to kind of pick yourself up again? And...
You mean during my acting period?
Yeah.
My Edward acting?
Yeah.
We didn't talk. His girlfriend didn't want him to talk to me. We lived literally 2 blocks from each other. In Soho, we didn't talk for years. We call them like the New York years, and we didn't talk. But then, when all that crazy, awful Sherman McCoy, Tom Wolfe, oh my God, Bonfire of the Vanities, they're taking me to Bellevue. What happened to me? Billy was one of the people very vigorously trying to get me out of that hell. Hellish situation.
Mm. He worked with you on the album Celebrity Skin, co-wrote a number
Malibu
of the songs.
And Celebrity Skin.
Mm-hmm. Here's a little bit from my guest Courtney Love and Billy Corgan helping out here. Once again, the new book called Dirty Blonde. Celebrity Skin from my guest Courtney Love. The book is called Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love. And you do give us a little bit of help navigating this book. I mean, as I said before, it's a series of pages torn from journals and photos and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't written much new except kind of in margins of things to kind of make...
New? What do you mean? Not written much new?
Well, you know, in terms of...
lot of the last third is everything from Rehab that's on this record. I don't know why there's a text page between me and Lindsay Lohan. They really wanted that one. Believe me, there was higher level stuff than that.
Yeah.
They just wanted the Lohan thing in there.
But, I mean, earlier on, there were things...
guiding you
yes,
through what is this,
you know,
this,
there's like
that?
A little comment here and there
right.
from you.
Okay, well, I mean, here's a picture of me and Liz Taylor comparing diamonds, and that's fabulous. And earlier in the book is a foster home report and my food stamp card.
Right.
So we can see I've had quite a bit of an up and down, you know, life. I think I've lived the American dream in... a huge way.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for that.
Well, the trajectory seems to be on a nice upswing right now.
Yes,
with the new book and the new record due, you think, in February, probably?
It'll be in February.
Now, you're working with Linda. Moby was here on Friday, said that
Linda, I got out of rehab. I'm like, I'm going now. I don't care. Linda's in with Christina, you know, and a lot of indie people are like, you know, Linda does Pink and Gwen and Christina and I've known Linda Perry since I used to do poetry open mic nights in San Francisco, and she used to play guitar. We've known each other forever. We're lifelong good friends, and she's got as good a taste when it comes to rock and roll as Radiohead. And I say that, and that sounds like a really almost pompous statement, but you know, she really, really, we really wanted to make an unpretentious record. So there's hardly any overdubs. When you are hearing a song, it's all seven people on that song playing.
So you can do this live.
You know, yeah. And really.
And presumably will be.
And actually did play once that it was like the Me and Kurt show. No one recorded it and no one photographed it. But we did play some of the songs live for 3,000 people in LA a few months ago, and it went down really well.
All right. So a final question. What sort of legacy are you hoping to leave for Frances, who's now, what, 14?
14.
She a guitarist herself these days?
She took guitar lessons for a while. She is probably leaning towards being a director. She's been offered about 4 feature films in the last few months.
At 14?
Every agent in town wants to manage.
So you don't have to worry about leaving her a legacy. She's building one of her own.
Look, when she's 18, they're going to open the door at Vanity Fair and say, your cover's ready, Miss Cobain. And she knows that. And there's an upside and about a downside to that. You know, the downside is that she knows better than to Google herself. But she once, we went horseback riding on Mother's Day, and I came home and all the food was in the garbage. I was like, what's going on? She had gone onto one of these gossip sites, you know, that they must have talked about Paris Hilton, whatever, and read comments about herself, you know, and that is her curse. You know, that's her curse, is that she had, and I said, listen, Frances, they say those things about Julia Roberts, you know,
but that's so tough for, you know, girl who's a teenager and just finding her way.
Yeah.
Courtney Love has been my guest. The book is called Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love. The new album will be called, perhaps, How Dirty Girls Get Clean.
Do they get clean?
That's another question for another show. But Courtney, thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me.
And still to come, Marisa Monte. She grew up training to be an opera singer before turning to pop music and becoming Brazil's top-selling vocal star. She'll share not one but 2 new albums next. This is Soundcheck. I'm the one with no soul. One above and one below. My last day. Mine is forever. My last day. You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.